From the pawns to the pros, it's time for Beyond the Pond on the Fan. Here are your hosts, Pat Micheletti and Kevin Faulness.
Actually, this is not Kevin Faulness. This is the less raspy Kevin Faulness. Michael Russo from The Athletic filling in on Beyond the Pond today for Pat Micheletti, who's out in Sioux Falls. He'll be on in the second hour, check in on the Gophers and the rest of college hockey. Kevin is off today. Unfortunately, he's had a loss in his family, and all the best to Kevin and his family. We have a great show today. Ryan Carter is going to start us off. Joe O'Donnell is going to be in the second hour. Dylan Laux, who's also in Sioux Falls covering the Gophers and that entire region, he'll be coming on at about 10:20. And then we got Gary Lawless, one of the great, great media members in all of hockey. He's an absolute legend, now working for the Vegas Golden Knights. He'll be coming on to talk about today's big Minnesota Wild Vegas Golden Knights tilt. Max behind the glass. Max, I just geeked out. I got to meet Trent Tucker. I can't believe I've been here 19 years and never met Trent Tucker.
Oh, that's your first time meeting him?
Yeah, no, wow. It is. And I'll be honest, I listen to Sinekin and Tucker all the time, and I just love his cadence, but I was a huge Bulls fan as a kid. I moved from New York to South Florida. I never liked the Knicks. I was always a Michael fan. And we got WGN down in South Florida, and I used to watch all those early 90s games, those Bulls games with our Red Clay and the incredible Chicago Stadium. Absolutely look forward to watching the starting lineups because of that music in the background. Obviously, Trent was just an amazing player back in the day. So I kind of geeked out. And he sounds like a big hockey fan, too. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised that you guys never linked up before. He's an elite hockey mind like yourself. So
it was pretty cool. We have a really cool action-packed show today, but I don't want to waste any time. Let's start off with Ryan Carter. Ryan, one of the best color analysts in the game right now. Not only that, but he's now a podcast host on Wild on 7th. He's also a beekeeper. So, Ryan, how'd you get into beekeeping? Tell everybody about this.
Hey, Mike. Well, first off, yeah, thanks for having me. Nice Saturday morning. But the beekeeping, gosh, that started, I have a daughter that has like a severe food allergy, and then she has seasonal allergies. And a friend once upon a time had said, in lieu of taking, you know, Zyrtec or a daily antihistamine, he would just take a tablespoon of local honey. And then it's the pollens in the air and the honey and through exposure therapy, it's helped. So wow. I ended up getting COVID early in the COVID time, and it was when it was like the 14-day quarantine, so I was like sequestered to the basement by myself for 14 days, and I had a pretty mild case of it, so I felt fine, and it was like, well, what am I going to do for 14 days? And so I decided to become a beekeeper. I watched like 80 hours of YouTube videos, read 2 beekeeping books. I came upstairs after 14 days and said to my wife, I'm a beekeeper now, and that's kind of how it started.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I got to do a feature on this at some point. I just love the videos that you always put out there. And obviously, you jar the honey in the summertime, right? I always see you bring a bunch into the arena and things like that.
Yeah. So we've got a handful of hives here, and they produce, you know, up to hundreds of pounds of honey, and you got to do something with it. But we usually harvest that in the fall. It's the beekeeper's job to source so that they've got enough honey to get through the winter, and then you take the excess and manage the hive that way, and then we like to bottle it up and share it with whomever we can.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Ryan, obviously huge game today. I know that the game's I believe it's TNT, or I think it's ESPN Plus and Hulu. It's you guys are off today at Bally's, and obviously it's been a weird season. Like, the Wild have played, you know, well of late and well since the All-Star break. But if you look at their wins, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of their last like 11 wins. And the losses are all against St. Louis, Colorado, L.A., Nashville, Carolina, like the teams that you have to win. They're taking advantage of the San Jose's, the Anaheims, and teams like that. So, like, you know, what do you make of that? Because I think that they feel like they're on par with these other teams. But yet, at least in the second half, anytime they play a team ahead of them in the standings, they're just not doing it.
Right. No, I mean, you're right on it, I think. And they haven't been able to win, like, the statement games, like beat St. Louis, you know, beat them in regulation and figure this out. And I don't think that any of them are feeling sorry for themselves, but you look at it and I think, and I equate it to, so the 2012 lockout, it was we thought we were getting back to work. And they'd say, yeah, things are looking good. And you'd start to ramp up your workouts. You'd be getting in shape. You'd be getting excited. And then all of a sudden they'd say, like, oh, boom, it's everything fell apart. Then you'd stop working out for a bit. Then you'd get going again, and you'd start to feel good, and you'd get excited, and things are going the right direction. Then we'd hit another road bump, and we'd go back. And that went on for, like, 4 months. And what ended up happening through each one of those, like, build-ups and letdowns was emotionally it started to take a little bit more out of you. I think that's kind of been the Wild season in a nutshell. They've got injuries to start the year. They start to get guys back. Things are going well, and then boom, something else happens, and then they, you know, they kind of hit the brakes, and then they get going again, and there's excitement. Everything's looking good. Another injury, boom. It's been the story of the season, and right down to the very end. The reason I think this last stretch they haven't been able to win these marquee games is because they are missing some of their marquee players. It's tough to beat playoff teams without Erickson Ek, without Jonas Brodin, without, you know, and they've been without Jared Spurgeon for a long time. And everybody is giving top effort, but when the rubber meets the road, they just don't have enough without the full allotment of players to win these big games against teams that are getting ready and have their game ramped up and in playoff mode.
Yeah, I remember in the early 2000s, I covered a Florida team that had about 350, 380 man games to injuries, but I still didn't feel like that was like this season. And I know the man games aren't on par with that, but in terms of integral players, they have lost significant players, starting with Spurgeon before the year, at the world's worst time. I mean, you go into home and homes against Dallas, Winnipeg, you need your guys. You can't be without your first line left wing, your first line right wing, your number one goalie, your top two D, your top left wing on the third line. I mean, it's really been just a laundry list of injuries all year long. I know nobody wants to make excuses, but when you have a cap hit of dead money of $14.7 million, that's when you start to see where the depth really hurts you, and the Wild just haven't had the depth this year to overcome that. Not that many teams can overcome a number of injuries like those.
I came into the season saying the number one thing the Wild need, down $14 million, is to stay healthy. If they can stay healthy, they'll, in my opinion, would have undoubtedly been a playoff team. And they haven't been able to stay healthy. And it makes sense because you start to look at what they have to do. Okay, we're down $14 million. We don't have all this extra debt. We have to keep rolling these guys out. They like Brock Faber playing 25 minutes. Like you have to play these guys in these tough situations. And then they got behind the eight ball in the season. And you can't, like, pick your spots and manage minutes. It, from the very start of the year, it was, let's give everything we've got. And I think that's part of the reason that injuries have started to show up. Like, Erickson Ek getting hurt, we don't know what it was or what it looked like, but that might be an overuse injury.
Yeah.
You know? And they'll reflect on that stuff later on in the season, but he's been an absolute horse. They've needed him to be a horse, but they've had to use him in absolutely every situation. And, yeah, would it be nice to give him a couple shifts off on the penalty kill, a night here or a night there? Yeah, but they can't do it. Would it be nice to have another face-off guy so that he doesn't have to take 70% of the team's face-offs? Yeah, that would be great. The unfortunate part is those injuries and the depth issue because of the money and everything else has forced the team into playing these guys. And it's just kind of been a snowball that started early in the year, rolled downhill, and the momentum hasn't been able to be stopped in terms of the injuries.
Without a doubt. We're talking to Bally Sports North's Ryan Carter, a longtime NHLer, host of the podcast, co-host of the podcast, I should say, of Wild on 7th with John King. You mentioned you were talking about the snowball and Brock Faber. You know, it really, if Jared Spurgeon doesn't get hurt this year, maybe this we don't realize how quickly Brock Faber could take on the load of minutes and the top matchups and all that stuff. I mean, he has been an absolute revelation at 21 years old. I know he came onto the scene last year, played 2 regular season games, 6 playoff games, wasn't on the ice for a goal against. I think, before the season, I predicted him actually to make the all-rookie team, but I don't think I ever thought that he would be this good this soon to to play the top lines every single night, to play on a lot of nights, 30 minutes a game. He's seventh in the league in ice time. How just incredible has this season been for that kid?
It really has. With rookies and young players, you see them go on stretches of really good hockey, and you can see the promise in their game and what they're going to be. What Brock Faber has done is entirely different because he's been able to do it for 71 games now. And we've talked about injuries at length for the first 5 minutes of this. Yeah. He hasn't been hurt.
Yep.
So he's been playing 25 minutes a night without getting hurt. And that's the knock on young players. Look at Connor Bedard, even Connor McDavid, Jack Hughes in New Jersey. When these young players jump into the league and they're playing big minutes and they start to feel good, they start to expose themselves, like trying to make stick handling skilled plays, and they get hit and they get hurt, and then they sit down for 6-8 weeks, and then it takes them a bit to get going again. That hasn't happened to Brock Faber, and a lot of that is because I think the maturity and mentality that he brings. It was interesting, exit meetings last year, he talked about the fact that it was the most important off season of his life.
Yep.
I think he took it seriously. I think he prepared his body and his mind for what was to come. He's never played this many games before. He's never played this many minutes. He's never played this many situations. But mentally, he prepared himself over the summer. And because of that, I don't think we've seen ebbs and flows in confidence and in his game. It's been remarkably consistent, and that's not something you see from a 21-year-old playing his first full NHL season. So I don't even know if the word remarkable does it justice, but certainly a silver lining when it comes to Jared Spurgeon being hurt and Jonas Brodin being hurt for stretches of time is you've had to rely on this young man, and you're kind of seeing what he's made of, and I think everybody's excited about it. Now, with that said, I do think that now there's like this internal kind of management of that narrative, like, yeah, he's great. He's playing really well. It's consistent. It's good. I think they like the headspace that he's in. They
yeah.
don't want this confidence bubble to burst, so they're kind of managing the narrative around him, but quietly, hush, hush, I think it's, yeah, this guy's the real deal.
Yeah, without a doubt, and he's going to get paid like he's the real deal this summer, probably an 8-year deal over $9 million, which is crazy the way that the market for young defensemen have gone the last couple of years. I wrote about that the other day. In the Athletic. We're talking with Ryan Carter, Wild analyst on Bally Sports North. What do you make of Kuznetsov so far? You know, he's had some rookie moments, but last game, you know, in the offensive zone a lot, it's not like he's getting a lot of support. His wings the other night were Marcus Johansson and Freddie Goudreau. That's not exactly at the way that they're playing this year, probably putting a young rookie in the best position to succeed or at least gobble up points. But, you know, there have been good moments and bad moments. What do you think of him going forward?
Well, I think what you see from him is that he plays with pace. He does compete. He'll be the first man in on the forecheck. He can disrupt plays. There are like moments where he makes good puck plays too, like patient plays off of the rush. I think there's room for him to make a few more plays, probably offensively. And some of that is, too, just a young guy figuring out how much leash they have. There's a language barrier.
Yep.
It's a different league. He's come overseas. Like, you want to make everybody happy. Great first impression. So I think a lot of times what young players end up doing is playing safe hockey. And I think we're seeing a little bit of safe hockey from Kuznetsov, which isn't a bad thing. But now you start to pressure him and you say, okay, we need some secondary scoring, or the Wild need secondary scoring, and we think you can be that guy. Go out and cross the blue line and make a play. And if you see one, try it. If we turn the puck over, Brodin, that's why we have Faber, Jake Middleton. You go down the list. And but the pace is there. I think that's exciting. The compete level is there. That's exciting. Now, when he gets comfortable with the game, can the offense come with those things? And I think that's what we're watching down the stretch.
And he can win a draw, which is always big on this team. I think this is going to be really valuable for him going into next season, just getting this little stint down the stretch to get in games, see what the NHL is all about, the difference between the KHL, time, space, speed, all that stuff. Going against a team like Vegas today will be absolutely huge for him. And then just getting used to, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul and the language and all that, I think he's just going to feel a lot more comfortable coming into training camp next year. And speaking of that, I mean, there is obviously, again, the Wild are still clinging on to their life. It's like a 2% chance to make the playoffs. They're 8 points back of L.A., 9 back of Vegas with a game in hand there. This is a must-win today. But just, you know, I think that all of us are pretty real that for the most part, that it is going to take them to pretty much run the table and then need some help to go and actually make the playoffs. But there is an importance to these games down the stretch, right? Not just for the Husna Dinas, but for a lot of the guys on this team to really continue to make their mark, play meaningful games, and show John Hines what he has going into camp next year. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally agree. I also think that there's long-term importance to it, too. It's not just for John Hines in the interim. I think that there are guys learning things that will help them throughout their career, but they're also showing things that will help coaches and management know what these guys are made of. And I'm going to go back to the St. Louis game at home, where Rossi scores two goals, Faber scores a third period goal. And you can even go back to the St. Louis game in St. Louis 2 weeks ago now, with the way Faber played in the third period, down two goals. What I saw from that is, like, Brock Faber is a winner. He's not just a good player. He's a winner. But so the game's on the line. It's in the balance. You're down two goals. Your season might be make or break. Are you going to give a little bit more? Are you willing to do what it takes to win this game? And I think Faber's showing, yes, he doesn't care about the accolades. He doesn't care about this. He'll play good defensive hockey. But if the game calls for offense late in the game, he finds it. He gets up in the play. He wins battles. He takes risk in the neutral zone. And he executes, but he also calculates at a great level. This is the right time, the right space, the right play for me to do this. And it's great to see, because you have Kirill Kaprizov on your forward side, who's a winner. When the game's in the balance in the third period, he's at his best. You can see him when he almost manually turns up the dial in the third, and you can see it. Faber might be that on the blue line, and Rossi might be that a little bit on the offensive side. I think he's got a little bit less of that right now, but it's important right now because he's learning that. He's seeing, like, okay, my team needs me. Can I ramp up? I can score two goals in a very meaningful game. And figuring out what these guys are like, if they have a winner's mentality, I think that stuff is important too. These games matter. Consistency matters. And it's not like a playoff series where it's seven games against the same team. These guys have to be good for 10, 12 straight games against different opponents, being a pro, with travel, schedule, everything else. Can they do it? So I think the games are valuable for these young players too, and these guys learning what they've got in some of these rookies and younger players.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be an interesting final 10 games here. We'll get to see if Volstead gets a look at some point from the minors, the Wild after the NCAA tournament. There are a couple of guys, college free agents, I think, that they are pursuing that they might have to burn a year on to get them to sign here. So we'll see. We could have some fresh blood still to cover. Ryan, thanks a lot. Enjoy your day off. Will you still come to the game today?
I will not. I'll be vacuuming and cleaning, prepping for the holiday tomorrow. So I won't be at the game, but we'll have it on TV here.
Well, happy Easter. Thanks, Ryan, for joining on this Saturday morning. It was great chatting with you.
I appreciate you having me. Have a good day.
Thanks. That is Ryan Carter of Bally Sports North. I got to cover him here on the Wild a couple times, and absolutely gem of a human being. Really cool show ahead. We're going to be talking to Dylan Laux after the break from Sioux Falls about the Gophers' win yesterday and their chances against BU today. Gary Lawless from the Vegas Golden Knights will be coming on. Joe O'Donnell in studio, the final hour of the Wild Radio Network. And also Pat Micheletti from Sioux Falls as well joining. We'll also take your calls in the final hour, so stay tuned. This is Michael Russo from The Athletic. We'll be back here on The Fan.
This is Wild's captain, Jared Spurgeon, and you're listening to Faulness and Micheletti on Beyond the Pond.
Here on The Fan, Beyond the Pond, Michael Russo filling in for Kevin Faulness and Pat Micheletti, but Pat's going to be joining us from Sioux Falls in the second hour. Joe O'Donnell will also be in studio. But right now, from Sioux Falls, Gopher Holes and the hockey news is Dylan Laux covered the game against Omaha the other night. Now we'll cover the BU game tonight as the Gophers try to advance to their second Frozen Four in a row. And they've got to deal with Macklin Celebrini, plus four the other night in their big win over RIT. And tell me about the game against Omaha, because I did not see 1 second of it, Dylan.
Yeah, it was a good game. It felt like at the start of it, it was more of two teams figuring out each other, because, you know, you go throughout the scouting, but you don't know until the game really starts. There's a big turning point in the first. There wasn't a lot of shots for either team, but when Ryan Chesley caught his elbow on Jack Randall, they originally gave it a 2-minute minor for elbowing. They reviewed and said, okay, this is a 5-minute major, and Omaha had essentially a 5-minute power play to score as many goals as they want. They got one. That 5-minute power play rolled over into the second period. It came out, they had 4 minutes. Omaha was once leading in shots, 19-4. And essentially the Gophers only allowed one goal on that power play. In a way, they kind of went. They needed a little bit of a spark. Jimmy Clark gave them that. They scored to tie it. They eventually walked out of that second period up in shots, 26-25. So at one point in the second period, they were down 19-4 in shots and came out, had a fantastic period. A really good third period. And Moscow had said before they left for Sioux Falls that he needs some of these upperclassmen to show their experience and kind of take this team. And Mason Evers gave a great pep talk in the locker room after the first period. Jackson Nelson goes out, scores a game tying goal and the game winner. Brodzinski assists on both of them. So it was a good game. Justin Close stood on his head as well. So they needed their experienced players to show up, and they did.
And, you know, it's not even just the experienced players and the upperclassmen, as you mentioned. As you also mentioned, Jimmy Clark, wild prospect, freshman, scores a huge goal there. What do you make of his play throughout the season, and what do you think his future is as entering sort of a very large crop of wild prospects?
Yeah, he's kind of one of those spark plug type players. Like he plays on the Gophers fourth line. He'll get his shifts in the first period, but as the game goes on, it's happened all the time this season. Bob will reward Jimmy Clark if he's playing well, and we saw it in the third period the other night. They were just essentially rotating the top two lines, but he'd integrate Jimmy Clark in to play with Brodzinski or to play with Nevers. And he rewards him for his good play. He's one of those speedy bottom six guys. He's physical. He does a lot of things right. He gets pucks deep, battles along the boards. And obviously he's one of those spark plug guys where when he scores, it's like, okay, it's a big jolt to the team, and they needed that. And he's got a good future ahead of him, especially with the Gophers. Bob talked about him last game on how he's going to be a big part of this team's future as he continues to grow. And I would basically expect the same thing for the Wild. He definitely will have a lot more years under his belt at the U, and would essentially transition to AHL later on in his career if they sign him. So yeah, he's got a good future, especially with Gophers.
We're talking with Dylan Lauks. You can follow him on Twitter, @DylanLauks4. Not only does he cover the Wild for the Hockey News, but he runs the college vertical at the Hockey News, and obviously covers the Gophers for Gopher Hold. This is Michael Russo from The Athletic. Dylan, you mentioned Jackson Nelson. I saw your quote from Bob the other day, basically reminding NHL teams that he is a college free agent that is available to be signed after the season. Talk about his play the other night and just how big he came up, but what do you see? He has played well the last couple months. Do you see him starting to get a lot of interest from NHL teams?
Yeah, I would assume so. He's one of those guys who kind of, like, I wouldn't say he really goes under the radar, because especially on this team, they know his value, his leadership, the style of game that he brings. But he's definitely a very intriguing player. He'll have stretches where he looks fantastic, and the other night he's playing in a building that he's very familiar in. It's just about 30 minutes from his hometown where he grew up. He had tons of family and friends there, and he essentially put the team on his back and said, okay, let's go win this thing. He's that type of player. But if the offensive side wouldn't translate to the NHL, he'd be a fantastic bottom six guy who can be physical, play well along the boards, win face-offs. It's the type of bottom six guy that on many NHL teams is valued, even if he's not putting up the points at the next level. So I do think a lot of NHL teams will start looking at Nelson as a guy that they could sign and want to bring over and help out in any team's bottom six.
Obviously, BU tonight, 5:30. So if you're going to the Wild game, a 2:30 puck drop there. You can still watch the Gophers game in its entirety if you run over to Tom Reed's or somewhere, someplace like that. The game tonight against that team, I mean, obviously star-studded players. You got the Celebrini brothers, including Macklin, who's going to be the number one pick most likely in the NHL draft coming up. You got Alex Tuck's brother and Luke Tuck. A lot of really quality players there. Where do you see this game, the importance, the strengths for Gophers to figure out a way to get to the Frozen Four again?
Yeah, it's obviously a lot different of a team than Omaha. Omaha is one of those older teams that are going to grind you down. They're going to play physical. And BU is one of those teams that relies a little bit on their skill and in their speed. You mentioned the Celebrini brothers, the Hudson brothers. Ryan Green's another talented forward on their team, and really their top line is an all freshman line. And since they were put together, they've had a point in every single game. So they're dangerous with Celebrini's line, but they've also have depth scoring and good defensemen. But they're a lot more of a skilled team. They struggled a little bit against RIT in their first game, but they got away based on playing on skill. So if the Gophers can exploit that and maybe play like they played against Omaha, I think they would be in a good spot to advance to the Frozen Four. But obviously you can't overlook BU with the tremendous amount of talent and skill that team has.
But how many players or Gophers are pretty much gonna lose this offseason?
Well, you have Nelson, Brodzinski, Close. They're the grad students. And then Kester's a senior, Nevers is a senior. So they'll lose a decent amount of players, but they have a ton of sophomores who will then be juniors. You have the Pitlicks and Huglins who will then be seniors. But obviously the big losses would be Justin Close, Jackson Nelson, Bryce Brodzinski. So,
yeah. The only reason why I ask is I really am starting to get intrigued of what Charlie Strammel does at Wisconsin. I just cannot see any way that he returns to that school. If anybody needs to enter the transfer portal, it's this guy just to get a fresh start. And obviously had a second straight tough year at University of Wisconsin with two different coaches. Moved pretty much down to the fourth line this year and not even at center, played right wing. And you know where I'm going with that. I mean, the irony is that the Wild passed up on Gabe Perreault because they went with Need, a big center, and now he's playing fourth line right wing. What do you make of his season, and do you expect him to go into the portal?
Yeah, I would expect him to go in the portal, and I think he needs that. I remember talking to him at development camp, I believe it was, and he said he was excited for the new coach and for him to kind of grow his game a little bit, and he was in the right spot at the start of the season, but once he went out with an injury, he missed a couple games, came back in the lineup, and then was kind of moved down the lineup. He started as the fourth line center, and then he moved to fourth line right wing. And even in the game last night, I think you could probably count on one hand how many shifts he got in the last two periods of the game. It wasn't many, and that's a little concerning that you have a first round pick in a tie game in a must-win playoff game, and he's only getting four shifts in the final third period and overtime. So I think a change of scenery for him is much, much needed, and maybe he can go to a different team that's not going to play him 8 minutes a night, is not going to shelter his minutes, isn't going to play him on the fourth line, and that would help his confidence. It would also probably help his game, and for the Wild, too, they probably want that.
I've got to think that the Wild were nauseated watching that game yesterday. And I don't think this is just relegated to Charlie Strammel. Like, look, Mike Hastings had a great first year, especially comparative to where Wisconsin was the last couple. But if you look at their roster, I mean, you know, you have Aiden Fink, the Nashville draft pick, decommitted, went to Penn State. Sean Scahan, son of the old Wild strength coach, 2024 draft eligible, decommitted, went to BC. Brady Cleveland, Detroit, second round pick, played 16 games this year. William Whiteclaw, Columbus third-round pick, 13th forward. you know, a laundry list of other players that either should be up in the lineup. Dyke is an Ottawa pick, scratched. Stenge, Detroit, scratched. These are all top prospects that Mike Hastings is not playing. And it just, I don't know if he's trying to turn them into, you know, Minnesota State where he just goes with 23-year-olds that he trusts or what it is. But I got to think that NHL teams are not going to want their top prospects going to Wisconsin if this continues.
No, and you brought up a good point with William Whitlaw's. Now he goes from a guy who should probably be in your top six on a lot of different college teams, and now he's the extra skater barely getting any ice time. It's worked for Hastings in the past, obviously, to play the experienced guys, but at some point you have to look at some of these guys who are supposedly top NHL prospects that are barely getting any ice time, and it's definitely concerning for every NHL team who has a kid playing for Wisconsin that if he commits there, yes, it's a great program with a lot of success and is probably going to translate to a lot of success. But for an individual player to grow his game, it's probably not the best spot for him, especially if he's 18, 19 years old when Hastings is going to bring in some of these older guys and rely on them. So I do think it's concerning for Stramel's perspective, but it's very concerning for all the other guys like Cleveland and Whitlaw and a bunch of the other prospects.
Yeah, another guy that I, by the way, I forgot was Tyson Jugnauth, Seattle fourth-round pick. He left Wisconsin's here after 13 games. He now has 41 points in 41 games in Portland. So this is, I know that it's become fashionable to trash Stramel and call him a bust and all this stuff, but what happened to him this year at Wisconsin was not unique, is all I'm pointing out. And he needs to get in the portal and get the hell out of there. But, hey, Dylan, enjoy the game today. 5:30 puck drop in Sioux Falls. Dylan Lauks, Gopher Hole, and Hockey News. You can follow him on Twitter at Dylan Lauks 4. Enjoy the game.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. That is Dylan. And when we come back, we're going to talk to one of my closest friends in the business, one of the legends up in Canada for years as a media member and now works for the Vegas Golden Knights since day one, Gary Lawless. We'll be back on The Fan.
This is Kevin Gorg, and I'll give you hundreds of reasons to listen to Micheletti. Hundreds. It's Beyond the Pod on The Fan.
Michael Russo from The Athletic back here on The Fan. Show is flying. Joe O'Donnell still to come. Pat Micheletti from Sioux Falls. And thanks to Pat and Kevin for letting me fill their chairs today. Got a ton of Twitter questions. That I will tackle with Joe in the next hour. Some really great questions asking about Eric Sinek for the Selke. Chance that Jake Middleton gets an extension. Lots of favor stuff, lots of stuff on Stramel, so we'll get to all that when Mr. O'Donnell gets in here. We might have a problem getting Gary on the phone. I'm not sure. Are you trying the 702 number, by the way? Okay. So if we might be answering some of these questions now. So let's go with a couple of them. Here's the one on Eric Sinek and the Selke. It's really interesting. Like obviously, I see him every day, and I have an incredible appreciation for what he does. His actual defensive metrics are a little down this year. Maybe it's because he's playing more on a scoring line or what it is, but for some reason it's down. So he has the 30 goals, but his defensive metrics are a little tough. And so I do wonder if that's going to wind up hurting him, in terms of getting votes for that. But I do think what I liked last year is he started to get a bunch of Selke votes. And I think that starting now is that reputation and all that stuff is going to get earn him votes. But if you actually look at the guys this year, especially the year that Kopitar is having, the year that Barkov's having, my guess is that those are going to be the top ones. To me, Faber is still the most interesting. Like, obviously, I get it, with Faber. Like you're going up against Connor Bedard. He's the shiny new toy. He's 18 years old. He's a point a game. But I don't think that you could take away from what he is. I don't think you could discount how bad he's been defensively this year and the fact that he's played no meaningful games. And I get that he's getting all the top matchups against top defensemen. But what does that say about Brock Faber? He's the one that's playing against every single line, every single night, the top guys and all that stuff. So we'll get into that with Joe O'Donnell. But really happy to be joined by one of my closest friends in the business from the Vegas Golden Knights. This is somebody that was a Winnipeg in Winnipeg forever, worked for TSN. And then all of a sudden in 2017, when the Vegas Golden Knights came into existence, he gave them credibility immediately by going there and becoming not only their insider on VegasGoldenKnights.com, but color analyst on radio. He's in between periods on all their TV, pre-post, in between periods. And he's author. This is what I'm sure he's most proud of It Hurts to Win, their Stanley Cup winning book last year. Gary Lawless, how are you? Gary, you there?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, that's a lovely intro. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. Gary, I you know, we've discussed, I remember when the announcement came that you were going to Vegas, all of us in the business were just blown away because it immediately, you were a legend up in Canada, and then to go there and be sort of the media face of a market that was going to need to introduce hockey to this market, and then to see the success years later, it's just got to be one of the most gratifying things that you've ever done in your long, long career, to go there and then to see this thing culminate with a cup last year and being definitely a contender this year.
Yeah, well, it was, I'd been in Winnipeg 18 years, and the newspaper business was changing. There weren't opportunities at the Athletic just yet that you took advantage of, and the team came along and offered me the opportunity to do, you know, all the things I love doing, right? Be on radio and be on television, and I jumped at it. But no one really expected, the Bill Foley Cup in six thing. Like, you know, he'll admit to it. He's like, I should never have said that. And even the playoffs in the first year was, and I told this story a bunch of times. I had told my wife and daughter I was going to take them to Italy because we were going to miss the playoffs in the first year. We're going to have lots of time off. And the team went to Nashville and Dallas in early December, back to back, and won both games. And I remember coming home to Vegas, got home at like 3 a.m. and I came in the front door, and I woke the dog up, and then I woke my wife up, and she came down the hall, and I looked at her and I said, "You haven't bought any tickets to Italy or anything like that, have you?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Don't." And she said, "Why?" I said, "Well, we're not going to Italy." She said, "Where are we going?" I said, "We're going to the playoffs." And it hasn't stopped, really. I know we missed the playoffs 2 years ago, but that was a really weird thing after a whole bunch of success, and then last year won the Stanley Cup. It's just been one thing after another in Vegas, and I got one of the best moments you ever get in your career. Came into the office a couple weeks ago, and there was this blue cylinder with the NHL logo and my name on it on my desk, and I tore the top off, and there was the replica Stanley Cup that members of an organization get with my name engraved on it. It was tremendous.
Yeah, and a ring, which I'm sure was very nice. I saw those rings.
It's funny, the ring is, worth, I'm sure, lots more money. But the cup was more exciting to me.
Yeah.
The ring is in a safe, and the replica cup is on a shelf in my house that I look at and I see and my daughter and my family see all the time.
Yeah, and it's cool. And as media members, when you're outside of an organization, when you don't work for one, you never think that you're going to get to, be part of something like that. And you were there from the ground up, and it's pretty absolutely awesome. Let's talk about this Vegas Golden Knights team right now. They're playing absolutely awesome, having huge comebacks. I watched the game against Seattle where Jonathan Marchessault and Jack Eichel showed they were Jonathan Marchessault and Jack Eichel. They were 1-2 on my Conn Smythe vote. Ballot last year, and then the other night, big tie-breaking goal in the final minutes in Winnipeg, and now you come into here and have a chance to put even though I think that it's a pipe dream that the Wild are going to make the playoffs, have a chance to put the shiv right in the back of them today with Petro and coming back and just a laundry list of talent. You've been inundated with injuries also this year, Gary. And that's probably why you're down where you are. But now you've gotten into that top three in the Pacific, and it just feels like any team that's going to have to face the Golden Knights in the first round has to be very, very nervous.
Well, I don't think there's a good matchup in the Western Conference. I think any team that gets in the Western Conference could be a Stanley Cup finalist. I think that, you know, after the first round, there's going to be four really good hockey teams looking around going, what the heck happened? And, you know, the Golden Knights, Pietrangelo addressed this to me yesterday. You know, they've been injured. They lead the league in man games lost, and it's kept them off of their rhythm and away from their consistency. And, you know, like that, the game against Winnipeg the other night, they were missing Mark Stone, Aiden Hill, Alex Pietrangelo, Thomas Hurdle, and William Carrier. Like, you take those players off any, the equivalent of those players off any team in the NHL, and they're going to be struggle to win. Vegas is, you know, their depth is coming back to the fore, and as they start to reintroduce these players into the lineup, you know, to me, if they get in, and even if they, I don't know when Mark Stone would play, if he does play at all, but I would think you'd have to be, you know, almost into the second round, and I kind of have a feeling if Vegas could get to the second round and be healthy, that then they could be trouble. They're 7-2-1 in their last 10, and they've picked up points in five straight, and all of a sudden, you know, they're defending like they did last year. You know, the chances against in their last seven games is fourth in the league. Their high danger chances against in the league is first over the last seven games is first in the league. Their 5.5v5 save percentage, fifth. You know, they're just they're defending like they did last year, and if they continue to do that, they're going to be dangerous.
Yeah, they're finding their stride at the perfect time. Plus, they're going to get, as you mentioned, Carrier, Hurdle, Hill, and Stone back hopefully at some point here. And we'll talk about that because I'm really interested how the heck they're going to fit everybody into their lineup because they have a lot of players now. But Gary, and we're talking with Gary Lawless, Vegas Golden Knights insider. You can listen to him. He does color on the radio, and he's between periods on television. And you can read him his fine work on their website. Gary, how does Kelly McCrimmon do it? Because most GMs, anytime you ask them, like, you know, hey, can you fit this guy? Can you do this guy? The first thing is, like, there's no chance. No way. We can't do that. And yet, it doesn't matter how creative he has to get. If he wants Noah Hanifin, if he wants Max Pacioretty, if he wants Mark Stone, if he wants Thomas Hurdle, which maybe saved the trade deadline this year in terms of intrigue, because nobody expected that. And somehow Mike Greer and Kelly McCrimmon kept that a secret. How does he do it? How does his front office get this stuff done? Besides the obvious that they, you know, they have the LTIR space, but still, most guys cannot figure out ways to do this.
Well, I think the first thing you just said is front office. It's not Kelly alone. I think that, you know, lots of teams say, oh, we'd love to have a president and a GM, you know, that work together. It just doesn't work in most places. And Kelly and George, that relationship, Kelly, George, and Bill Foley, that relationship atop the organization is, they're aligned. They work together. They work in concert. They're one, and yet they're still three separate people. You know, Foley has this incredible analytical mind and business acumen. So, you know, McPhee is a lawyer. McCrimmon has an MBA, and then McPhee played in the league. McCrimmon was a coach, a general manager, and an owner in the Western Hockey League forever, where you kind of have to do everything around a hockey team. They've got a really unique breadth of experience between the three of them. And then they, you know, when you look at the top of our relationship of our organization, Vaughn Carpen, Jim McKenzie, Bobby Lowe's, Andrew LeGurner, Tom Peraska, all these guys have been there since day one. And so they've retained all these really good people, and I've been fortunate enough to be in the room during the expansion draft process to see how they go about things. And this is not one voice. This is everybody contributing. And, it, you know, eventually the general manager needs to go in his office and shut the door and make the deal. But getting to that, you know, getting to the altar, it's a village working in concert, and it's very impressive how they've been able to stay together and everybody, you know, check their egos and everybody fill their role and no one run off and go and try and run another organization. It's been really good.
Yeah, and I also like how he, like I did a podcast with Kelly a couple weeks ago on The Athletic, and he pointed out that the first thing he did after the trade deadline was send a note to all the amateur guys, Scott Luce and that whole crew, to let them know, like, hey, I know this is tough that we're trading picks all the time and prospects and things like that, but if you guys don't trade, draft Zach Bien, we don't get Barbashev. If you don't draft David Edstrom, we don't get Thomas Hurdle, to just sort of lift their spirits. Because, as amateur guys, you spend all year going out, scouring the land for talent, and when you don't get to see that fruit actually playing in a lineup, it probably becomes hurtful. And I just love how he was so aware of that to really make that really known to his amateur guys.
Yeah, so, like Bruce Springsteen is the patron saint of every roadie and guitar tech on the planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kelly McCrimmon is the is the guy that respects and looks after scouts and equipment guys like nobody else. It's funny when we were given our, when the broadcasters were given our Stanley Cup rings, Kelly made the comment that, I looked after the scouts and the trainers, George looked after you guys. it was true. You know what I mean? George has a real, they both have a real affinity for knowing how important everyone around them is, and that it's not a two-man show. It's an organization all pulling, on the same oars. It's been a fun place to work.
Yeah, no doubt. I remember in 2016, after Vegas had just gotten their expansion franchise, I'm out there, I think, on vacation on Labor Day, so early September, and I text George McPhee, who, I'd known from his days in Washington. I said, hey, can I come out? I was still at the Strip at the time. Can I come out and do a big feature? And he's like, yeah. So I drive out to sort of like an office park where Bill Foley had one of his businesses, and that was like the original Golden Knights offices. And
I'm
George,
one of the few that worked there. like that's the he has a huge financial services company.
Yes,
it was one of his. Yeah, he cleared out the main floor, and it became. They sold tickets there. They had hockey ops meetings. They wrote press releases there. Everything happened there until the practice facility was built.
And I just, he first of all, he comes and gets me from outside, and he left his key card inside, and his longtime assistant from Washington. What's her name again? She's been there forever.
Katie Benzer.
Yeah, Katie's been with, has been with him forever. And she had to come out and get us, and we go up to this big conference room on the second floor, and on each of the tables, on the table at each of the chairs, there had to be 25 chairs, was a laptop and an iPad. And he was going through each one, setting it up, because the next day he was having his first amateur meetings with those guys. And just to see it from that ground up and then go to the Stanley Cup final against Washington their first season and then obviously make the playoffs every year but one and now win a cup, it's pretty unbelievable. We talk about this team right now and how much depth they have, Gary. I mean, you got Hurdle, Carrier, and Stone that are out of the lineup. Three guys are going to have to come out of the lineup when they're in the lineup. And then you got your blue line where I don't know what they're going to do with guys like Whitecloud and Martinez. I mean, these are proud, proud, good hockey players. I mean, this team is loaded. What do they do with their lines and their blue line if they're all healthy?
Well, if they're all healthy, right? Like, that'll be a great problem to have. And I don't think that Bruce Cassidy's going to lose too much sleep on any of that until he has to. Although I'm sure... You know what I mean? He's, laid up at night and thought, okay, I can put Hurdle there, I can put Stone there, and all of a sudden, potentially you're going to have a top nine that includes the likes of Barbashev, Eichel, Marchessault, Stevenson, Stone, Hurdle, Dorofeev, Carlson, Mantha. Like, those are nine really good forwards, and then, Carrier, Waugh, and Kolesar were the best fourth line in hockey last year, and, you know, just like took the Dallas Stars out of the playoffs just by themselves. They were so good in that series. So really good problems to have. The thing with the defenseman, early on in my career, the general manager said to me, if you want to win the Stanley Cup, you need 10 defensemen
mm-hmm.
and 10 NHL defensemen. And that's throughout the whole year. And, you know, so you have a couple of guys in the American League that can come up and play games at certain points. So they certainly have close to 10 in Vegas this year, that's for sure.
A couple more minutes with you, Gary, then I'll let you get on to the rink. I did want to ask you about Marcia. So, I mean, it's almost an inside joke here in Minnesota how much Wild fans know how much I appreciate Marcia. So I just think he's an unbelievable hockey player. And what I love about him is that in a big moment in big games, he always comes through. Always. He did it throughout the postseason last year. We've seen it down the stretch this year with you guys, you know, hovering in that wild card position. He just scores big goal after big goal. But then you add Hanifin and Hurdle, and now there's a cap crunch there. What happens with him this offseason? Because he is free.
Yeah, you know, I think that's something that Kelly has decided he's going to deal with in the summer. And, you know, Hanifin has, he's a UFA as well. He hasn't been extended. So where all those dominoes fall, you know, Kelly's the only one that kind of will have an idea about that. And it'll also, you know, the players will have a say in it too, because, you know, like you look at, you know, in Tampa, guys have taken less to stay. I would never suggest a player do that, because that's their business. They, you know, they know how much they need to get them through. You know, you retire at, let's say you retire at 40, you know what I mean? Hopefully you got 45, 50 years left on the planet. So you need to know how much you have to have. That's a personal decision. And yeah, I guess you have to weigh it against, there's so many things, right? You know what I mean? Do I want to live in Vegas? Do I want to live somewhere else? Do I want to play with the players I've played with? Just it goes on and on. So there's going to be decisions to be made on both sides, that's for sure.
Yep, no doubt about it. I bet the words no state income tax will come out of Kelly's mouth a couple times in those negotiations with Jonathan. And I remember when I was out there for the Western Final last year, and I remember when you guys landed from Edmonton and Jonathan Marchessault went right to the practice rink to go coach his kids. And I wound up meeting with him after that, and I'm looking at a guy that I bet you he's going to figure out a way to stay in that spot. So, hey, looking forward to seeing you at the rink today. Big game between the Minnesota Wild and the Vegas Golden Knights. Gary, you're an absolute gem, legend in the business. And if you want to follow Gary on Twitter, Gary Lawless, you won't be at all disappointed in that. Appreciate it, Gary.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Yep,
have a great
thanks.
Day, okay?
That is Gary Lawless. We'll see him at the rink in a little bit. Joe O'Donnell just walked in. There is zero doubt that in the history of the fan, there has never been two more well-dressed people in these two chairs, because we're both wearing our suits because we have to go right from here to the game. Joe O'Donnell, Wild Joe Radio. We'll be back here on The Fan.
I'm Jonas Berdine of the Minnesota Wild, and you're listening to Fallness and Micheletti on Beyond the Pond right here on The Fan.
Michael Russo from The Athletic back here on The Fan, final hour of the show, filling in on Beyond the Pond today with Kevin Faulness out and Pat Micheletti out in Sioux Falls for the Gophers game against Boston University, 5:30 puck drop. Pat will actually be coming on in about 20 minutes from now to talk a little bit about that game and a little bit about college hockey. But in studio now for a 2:30 puck drop, what time pregame show, Joe O'Donnell? What time is that?
It'll be 2:15.
2:15 pregame show right here on The Fan. Right on
yeah.
The Fan or
I
the
mean,
plus?
No. We're on the mothership. I'm just trying to think. Is it maybe a little bit earlier than that? I don't. You know, I'm kind of like a rock star.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that from an egotistical standpoint. Like I literally just take the stage when the puck's about to drop.
Yes,
which I kind of like. You know,
yeah.
In the minor leagues, I did the pregame show, the intermissions, the postgame show, all the interviews,
wrote
all
the
that
notes.
Stuff, all of it. Now it's just like, here we go.
Yeah,
and I just jump on. So Kevin. Well, Kevin's out, but, you know, normally it's Kevin or Halvey or Brandon Molesky. Fielding did excellent work the other night with the Sharks in town. And Tom Reed has to actually carry a lot of the mail in the pregame and postgame show. I get the easy part.
Yeah. And, you know, your interviews before the game are a lot easier than they used to be. I remember when you were in Iowa, one arm of yours was much, much bulkier than the other one. It was like you only lifted weights with your left arm.
Yes, holding that microphone.
I never understood that. And then one day I was down there for the Zach Parise return, and I got to see why.
Yeah. That was his conditioning stint, right? It was just after Christmas that one year. Came down and played a game.
Chris Schlenker, I think, made his professional debut or something.
So Tim Army, when we would have our conversations, I don't know if I told you this, one day in Stockton, I asked him one question. Now, in fairness, it was a long winded, it was a bad broadcasting question, because I summed up like three or four things, you know, Kyle Rowell's back in the lineup, it was a tough loss, you're in a bit of a skid, this is a big game. I went too many places for Tim Army, God bless him, and he talked for 8 minutes. And he finished after 8 minutes. And I said, all right, Coach, thanks for your time. Good luck tonight against Stockton Heat. And we got done. He goes, that's it? I go, Coach, that was 8 minutes. Like, that's double the length of time I had to fit into this already short pregame show. So, yeah, I got used to holding the microphone and really, you know, try holding your arms just straight out in front of you for 5 minutes at a time and let me know how that feels. Yeah. So
there was that game, they had one of your interviews on the Jumbotron, and you subtly at one point changed arms with the mic, and I just laughed.
Yeah, you were dying. You know who used to love that is Brad Bomadier. A Bomber, obviously still with the organization, player development. He goes to Iowa a ton. But when I was there and would do the video board pregame interview with the coach, Bomber would always get a kick out of just watching me stand there for as long as I keep that arm straight and extend it out there.
Yeah, we're talking with Joe O'Donnell. You can follow him on Twitter at Wild Joe Radio. Used to be Arrow Joe. Then it was, what was it in Iowa?
It was Wild Joe Radio.
Oh, that was smart. That was like, you didn't have to change it again. That's like me when I went to The Athletic. I had to change from Russo Strim to, and then I'm like, well, I can't go Russo Athletic.
Yeah.
Because then if I leave this job, I'm going to have to change it again.
Right. So and then you're telling people you're athletic.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know if we want that.
Yeah, I know. Nobody's going to buy that. It'd be the least athletic Twitter account. So make sure you follow him on Twitter. And obviously, this is now your third full season here?
Second full year of doing every game, third year traveling, doing every road game. Bob Kurtz was going to do 20 home games in that 21-22 season. And then quietly kind of stepped away.
It was quiet. All of a sudden, we're just like, hey, wait a minute. We haven't seen Bob.
I got a call like January-ish, right after the Winter Classic from Mitch Helgerson. And he was like, hey, I think Bob's done. Can you pick up the last, I don't know, he had maybe 8 home games left to do or whatever. And I was like, absolutely. But that was just Bob Kurtz. You know, I don't know him as well as
no
you
fanfare.
Or maybe Tom Reed. But, like, he didn't want any limelight. He didn't want anybody to know. He just called a game, and for whatever reason, he decided that was it and told the brass, like, I'm out. And he's in Pepin, Wisconsin, hanging out now.
And I remember when they honored him, they had to twist his arm.
Yeah, because he didn't even want the night last year.
Well, even, like, remember the good Arby article I did with him? It was a combo hello Joe article with him.
Yeah.
So I met with both of you together because he just didn't want a goodbye story. I mean, he's just
And you know who else is just like that?
Yeah.
His longtime buddy and partner, Tom Reed.
Yeah.
TR, whenever TR says that's it, I might be the last to know, I feel like.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way. Like, that's just Tom. Like, one day he'll just say, I've had enough, and God bless him. He's been outstanding. He's so dedicated to sport. You know, and obviously he's meant so much to the organization, myself personally. I hope that day's not near, but, you know, obviously when Tom decides it's time, I don't think he's going to want any type of anything other than just that was it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Have you won any Emmys for the Instagram Live that you do before every game?
No, we should, though.
Yeah.
Puck Preview Live, about 90 minutes for puck drop. Actually, I have to find a guest for today because it's a national TV broadcast, so my normal running mate, Kevin Gorg, won't be at the game. But if you want a fun but informational game preview, Instagram Live, some of them we also post on just the Instagram story of the Minnesota Wild account, but about 90 minutes from puck drop, I promise you it'll be entertaining.
Maybe I'll do it just for the bottle of the Captain Morgan.
Yes, it is sponsored by Captain Morgan, and so... Yeah.
I know this is going to come as a shock to you.
We don't get to drink it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I know this is going to come as a shock to you, but I used to drink a lot of Captain Morgan.
This is not a shock to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Your sarcasm is not lost.
Yeah, yeah. And then somebody told me, you might want to go to clear liquids. So then I went to vodka, not water.
I'm a big Tito's guy, with water.
I agree. Me, club soda. All right, let's talk about the game today. Then we got Pat Micheletti coming up, and then final about 20 minutes of this segment is going to be all yours. You can call the show, or We got tons of Twitter questions that we're going to go through. I got so many Twitter questions, I'm going to have to turn this into a mailbag. Wild play Vegas. They're 8 points back of L.A., 9 back of Vegas. I was just going through their hockey reference with Ryan Carter in the first segment. I mean, this is their last month. Win against San Jose, loss against St. Louis in overtime, loss against Los Angeles, win against Anaheim, loss against St. Louis in a shootout, win against Anaheim, win against Arizona. All right, win against Nashville in overtime. I'll give them that. That was the exciting pull the goalie. Win against Arizona, win against San Jose, loss against St. Louis, loss against Nashville, loss against Carolina. You see a common denominator?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to steal your number. It's in my notes. I didn't use it last game, but I might use it today. Teams 1-8 in the standings ahead of the Wild. They've won 8 of 25 games.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Or, yeah, 8 of the last 25 or whatever.
No, it is 8. You're right. Yeah. Eight of 25.
So it's just like, you know, who are they? And do you steal the Dennis Green line? We are who we thought they were. I mean, ultimately, there's a few things when you look back at the season. Again, pending they don't run the table, pending they don't sneak in, it's going to be, for me, the injury bug, the early season goaltending struggles, and then the inability to sort of put teams away or to win those big games and big moments down the stretch. Like, when you looked at it post-All-Star break, I think they had the second easiest schedule on paper. They took care of all those teams. You just said it. They didn't lose to Arizona. They didn't lose to San Jose. They haven't. They beat Anaheim when they had to. They beat Chicago the one time they played them since the break. So they took care of those free bingo squares. It's been the St. Louis, the Nashville, the Colorados, the Winnipegs, the tough teams where they've just, for whatever reason, come up short. It's so disappointing. I know you and I have talked about a lot over the course of the year. Like, when you're this close, like Pittsburgh last year, missing the playoffs by 1 point or whatever it was, like, they had that last game of the year against Chicago. They don't get it done. Florida sneaks in. They go to the Stanley Cup final. When you're that close on the bubble like the Wild are, if they come up 4 points short, 3 points short, 5 points short, they're going to be able to pinpoint three or four games that were just the Arizona loss at home after you blew a lead to the Flyers in January and lose in overtime. The next day you come out and get beat by the Coyotes 6-0. The back-to-back with Winnipeg right before New Year's Day where you had a lead at home in the third on New Year's Eve, couldn't seal it up. The Buffalo Sabres game is a massive loss point where Greenway scores of all people with 30 seconds left. The two games before the break, Nashville and Anaheim, where you had third period leads at home. Like, that's 4 or 5 points right there that aren't, like, we're not talking about a stretch of hockey. We're talking about, like, a period. Play a better period of hockey three or four times, and you probably are 3 points back of Vegas right now, and you play them twice, and it's a way different script down the stretch. So, frustrating as heck. I can't imagine being a player and just looking at some of those, if that's how they operate, and go, man, we just didn't take care of the opportunities in front of us. Now, they've been banged up. Okay, yeah. I give them full credit. The guys have not quit. The fact they're even in this spot is amazing. This could have been a 30-game, you know, funeral procession, to be honest, going into the All-Star break with the way they went in. But they found a way to keep themselves in it. I give the leadership group a lot of credit for that. We'll see what happens over the last 10 games.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, they win 5 of 19 games under Dean Evason, but even with that, I mean, if you don't blow the 2 points against Winnipeg, if you don't blow the 1 point against Philadelphia, if you don't blow the 2 points each against Anaheim, Nashville, if you don't blow the 1 point against Buffalo,
right.
I mean, they're in a playoff spot.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, it really is, and that's where it's going to come down to. At the end of the day, because I just don't see how they don't come up short.
I do like what John Hines has brought to the table, and this is not a shot at Dean Evason at all. But as I'm looking at differences between the coaches, John Hines changes the lines up in-game way more than Dean ever did. Changes them up game-to-game way more than Dean ever did. Again, not right or wrong, but just a different philosophy. And even after sometimes some of these wins, if it hasn't been pretty, if there's been a period that hasn't been pretty, and you guys have asked him about it in the media post-game, I feel like John Hines has been openly honest about, like, this isn't good enough. This standard isn't good enough if you want to actually compete with the big boys or have a deep playoff run. So we'll see how that transpires in the John Hines era moving into next year. Who's brought in, who's not, which guys are retained, who's not. And just, can this team start to take the next step, which is when it matters, when the chips are down, find a way to win these big games and be more consistent in these big games.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, even after last game, right, they beat San Jose 3-1.
There was no celebrating. But all he talked about was the you know, the second period was atrocious. Yep. You know?
Well, I mean, Freddie Goudreau, minute 33 shift, and he just dumps the puck, and it almost lost him the game. I mean, right? Because he just didn't make a proper decision. You know, there was a great example there. Let's do this. Let's take a break. Let's get to Pat Micheletti in Sioux Falls. Danny from Prior Lake, if you don't mind, hang on one more segment. I'll get to you right after Pat's off the air. Promise you that. If you want to call the show, by the way, 1-800-320-5326. Again, 1-800-320-5326. You can also text me at 64686. This is Joe O'Donnell, Wild Joe Radio on Twitter, the voice of the Minnesota Wild here on The Fan, and Michael Russo from The Athletic will be back here on The Fan.
This is Wild Head Coach John Hines, and you're listening to Beyond the Pond with Faulness and Micheletti on KFAN.
Beautiful Saturday, Minnesota Wild and the Vegas Golden Knights. Puck drop at 2:30. Tune in earlier for the pregame show right here on the Mothership The Fan. You can hear Joe O'Donnell and Tom Reed. Joe's in the studio with me. And then at 5:30, out in St. Sioux Falls, the Golden Gophers will try to beat a very star-studded Boston University team to advance to their second Frozen Four in as many years. And maybe this time they'll put the right guys on the ice in overtime, if that comes to it. Pat Micheletti, how are you? Pat, you there? Hello, Pat.
Well, that was a good segment.
Yeah.
Pat brought to you by...
take over the show.
There he is.
There you are. I was getting worried. I was going to have to call your son and have him fill in.
Yeah, he probably would have. You know that. But thank you. 2 weeks in a row, I appreciate it. And yes, we are in Sioux Falls, and looking forward to this afternoon's game. It's going to be a really good one, I think.
What is Sioux Falls like? I've never even been to South Dakota, believe it or not.
You know me, I'm Mr. Boring when I come to cities. I come here for a purpose, to do the game, sit in my hotel room, do my work, go to the rink and back. So you are asking the wrong guy. From what I'm told, it's a very nice city, a lot of good restaurants, you know, things of that nature. But you know, I come here with one thing in mind, and that's to watch hockey and do the games and, you know, be on my merry way.
Before we talk about the BU game, let's look back at the Omaha win the other night against Omaha. The Golden Gophers beat them. Man, you know, outshots 19-4 at one point. Next thing you know, they completely turned the game around. What changed in that game?
Well, you know, they couldn't get going, Michael, because you know Ryan Chesley took a 5-minute major, and that got them out of sync. They, you know, you have guys like Brody Lamb, Connor Kurth, you know, Jimmy Snuggerud, Oliver Moore. You know, they weren't out on the ice. And so Minnesota couldn't get in any rhythm whatsoever. And credit Omaha. They, you know, they play a hard, they play a heavy game. And you know, one of the keys for me was for Minnesota to get to their game. And that just took, you know, a good period and a half to get going because of the penalties. And then they got behind. You know, I think, you know, once they got into their rhythm, when they started rolling four lines, they started to, in my opinion, control the game a little bit more.
Pat, when you look at the Terriers, what jumps out the most? What's the key for Minnesota to give themselves a good chance to win this hockey game today?
Well, you look at their lineup, and, you know, we know all about Macklin Celebrini. We know all about Lane Hutson. And they've got some other high enders that you know, you look at the roster and you say, boy, that's a pretty scary roster. But when you watch them play, they're a team that likes to take a lot of chances, a lot of risk taking. They gave up three or four breakaways against RIT in the first game, and if it wasn't for a pipe, if it wasn't for a couple good saves by their goaltender, the game could have been completely different. So I think it's, you know, I really like the matchup for Minnesota today, because Minnesota understands how they need to win. And they don't have the Cooley, Nye, Snuggerud line that, you know, okay, we need a goal, go out, you know, send them out there. They have to methodically win hockey games and play a full 60 minutes and stay out of the penalty box, which they've done a terrific job of all year. So I like the matchup. If Minnesota can just, you know, not get sucked into playing a run-and-gun type game, I think they're going to come out on top today.
Chatting with Pat Micheletti here on Beyond the Pond. Joe O'Donnell, Michael Russo filling in. Pat, the experience last year from the Gophers and the heartbreak, how much does that fuel them? How much can that help them today and hopefully moving forward?
Well, you know, two completely different teams, but a lot of the same guys. And I think, as I just alluded to, Joe, I think it took them a while to understand that, it, you know, every game is going to be hard. It's not going to be an easy game for them. They just can't turn it on and turn it off. And when they when they get in that mindset of knowing how they have to win, they're really good. You know, you look up the middle of the ice for Minnesota, and one of the, you know, one guy, Jackson Nelson, is playing like a man possessed right now. 11 goals in his last 11 games. He's a different player than he was a month ago. And so I really like Minnesota up the middle. And yeah, you know, listen, last year's game is in the back of their heads. However, you know, I think they're starting to understand, you know, new year, you know, different team, and, you know, let's move forward.
Yeah, I think, by the way, keep on saying they're trying to get to their second straight Frozen Fours. It would actually be their third. In fact, actually, the winner of today's game will go to their 23rd Frozen Four. The Gophers and the Terriers are actually tied with 22. Question from Eric in Circle Pines for you. Will Jimmy Snuggerud return next year? I would say the chances are nil, right?
I talking to his father would love him to play 4 years here. And
St. Louis Blues will freak out if that happens.
I'm not.
The Wild are okay with that.
He's going to sign. Everyone thinks he's going to. Listen, for me, Michael, and we can talk about Macklin Celebrini, who's going to be the number one pick in this year's draft. He's 17 years old. He's a hell of a player. We all know that. He deserves to be the number one pick in the draft. But is he going to be ready for the NHL next year at 17 years old? I watched him the other night, and you know, he can shoot the puck as well as anybody. He has an NHL shot, but he's 17. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm not so sure if I'm a general manager, the best thing I think for him would be to come back another year. Jimmy still has things that he has to work on, you know, the other parts of his game. We know he can score goals. But there's other elements of his game that he still has to work on. I think he knows that. And I can tell you this, he loves playing here. He really does. And so I'm not sold on the fact that he's going to sign.
Interesting. That'd be really fascinating because Blues fans definitely, obviously, as you know,
tell you this, and I got from a good source. You know, look at the guys from Michigan, Rucker McGroarty, Gavin Brindley, Seamus Casey, they are all coming back next year.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Which might surprise a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Because I know Winnipeg has McGroarty's rights, and I'm not so sure he wants to go there. But again, they love playing at Michigan, and they have a heck of a team. And, you know, all reports I got, at least last night, were that all those guys are coming back.
Before we let you go, Pat, I did want to ask you about two potential college free agents that I believe the Wild are pursuing. One is Colin Graf, who's, with Quinnipiac and obviously has advanced with a big win over Wisconsin yesterday to eliminate them. And the other is TJ Hughes, had a goal and assist yesterday, three shots plus two for Michigan in their win against North Dakota. What do you think of both these players?
I love TJ Hughes. I just think he's a gamer. And, you know, he gets overshadowed by the high draft picks and you know, Casey McGroarty and Brindley and Nazar. Although, by the way, I think Nazar is the one player that might sign off of Michigan. I forgot about him. But I love T.J. Hughes. I just think, you know, I don't know if he'll ever be a top six guy in the National Hockey League. But, you know, he's definitely in your top nine. He's skilled. He's smart. You know, can shoot the puck. You know, he scored a big goal yesterday, obviously. But I really like the kid. Graf, you know, I've only seen him a couple times, Michael, in last year's Frozen Four, and then yesterday a little bit. I mean, you know, he's going to be right up there. And hopefully the Wild get him because he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, I think about 31 teams.
Jackson Nelson either, because what we're seeing out of him, and I know two teams that I can't name because I don't know, but speaking to some family of his, you know, he's got a couple good offers on the table. Should Minnesota, get eliminated, and so. And the way he's played, I mean, he's just, you know, he's 233 pounds, Michael, 6'4", and just, going hard to the net, doing a lot of really, really good things for Minnesota. And, you can't find that size, skill, and the way he skates is, you know, it's, he's been fun to watch.
Pat, you're going to be back in this chair next week?
I don't know. I mean, you're doing such a good job.
And it's a good point.
Same with you, Joe. I don't know. You know, I don't know if I'm worthy, but maybe we'll see.
I think you miss Kevin too much. You got to be back in this chair, don't you think?
A couple weeks is a good break, as you guys know.
So. Well, Pat, have a great call tonight. Enjoy the game. I think that the people running the Frozen Four at XL Energy Center would love the Gophers to be in. As well as I do.
You want to have a home state team. About their chances today. I think the makeup of this team tells me that, you know, they're primed to get back. So we'll see at 5:30.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
Let's hope. That is Pat Micheletti. The normal co-host of Beyond the Pond, filling in today with Joe O'Donnell. Thanks, everybody, for listening, by the way. But if you want to talk to Joe and myself, ask a bunch of wild questions, feel free to participate by calling 1-800-320-5326. You can also text us at 64686. A bunch of them are coming in right now. Somebody asked, 612 guy asked if Zach Parise retires after this year. Does that affect the Wild's cap hit for next year? No, that's essentially why they bought him out, so they wouldn't then have to go shed $7.5 million worth of players this year on cap or capture and things like that. Scott asked, Russo, you used to cover Tampa Bay. Would you like to be covering the Lightning during their Stanley Cup winning seasons? I actually covered Florida, so I never got to cover them during their Stanley Cup winning seasons. I actually covered Tampa Bay, Colorado when they lost to the Avs. So we'll be doing that. Final question of this segment, and then we'll go to break. Love the work that you do. If the Wild are eliminated before their final game, can we convince Mike Modano to lace them up so he can get to 1,500? How great would that be?
That'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool.
I think once upon a time, Gordie Howe played one AHL game to play in six decades.
Something like that, five or six.
It was
six
a little
decades.
Bit of a promo.
Yeah,
but,
not a little bit.
A big promo, but kind of cool, and I'm sure that sold some tickets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hey, if Madonna's going to lace him up, you can better believe those butts are going to be in the seats.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to break. Give us a call. This is Mike Russo from The Fan, and Joe O'Donnell's in here with me. Mike Russo from The Fan, final segment of the show, in studio with Joe O'Donnell, Wild Joe Radio, the voice of the Minnesota Wild here on the mothership, The Fan. You can listen to him today and Tom Reed at 2:30, a pregame show earlier than that. We think it's 2:15, but it might be 2. Tune in early and
Yeah, you'll just be surprised. Just stay dialed right into the Minnesota Wild radio network.
Yeah, we got to get to the phone lines because poor Denny from Prior Lake's been on the hold for 35 minutes. I cannot imagine being on hold for anybody for 35 minutes, let alone to talk to us, Joe. But somebody did ask, hey, Russo, am I a trader for buying an Avalanche hat when the Wild are eliminated? I'll be honest, I am likely when the Wild are also out of the playoffs, I'm probably going to go cover either Colorado or Florida. So we're sort of together on that, Trevor from Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Yep,
you don't buy other teams' gear.
Yeah, I won't be buying hats, but I might be covering those teams. I did cover Colorado in the Stanley Cup a couple years ago, Vegas last year. Danny from Prior Lake, what were you doing on hold for 35 minutes? Like, you must have an unbelievable question.
I'll wait to talk to you.
Oh, yeah. That's a treat.
This is my second time getting to talk to you, Mike.
Hopefully it's better than the first.
Well, I got a lot of stuff for you here, so here goes.
I bet.
Number one, why is not Marat up on the top line for 3 or 4 games to see what he can do? He skates good. He shoots good. He's a two-way player. The only way you're going to tell what he can do is if you actually give him some time.
Denny, how would you know if if he shoots well, Denny?
Well, that's.
I'm not trying to take a shot at the kid, but I think he has like 2 or 3 shots in a handful of games. It's the one thing I haven't seen from him. I agree with the skating. I agree with the hockey IQ and the tenacity on the forecheck. I think he's going to be a really good player. I just don't right now. I could be way off, but I don't see him as a top 6 guy. I just haven't seen any part of his game at all that tells me he can score at the NHL level.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, it's early. I agree with Joe, though, Denny. I think I said this to you last week. Like, it seems like Wild fans are under the impression that Murat Husandinov is Danila Yurov. Like, he is forecast to be a third-line center. And, you know, the fans that are upset that he's not up in the lineup, their top two centers right now are Erickson and Rossi.
I mean, he got benched the other day.
Yeah, like fans all year long have wanted Rossi with Kaprizov and either Boldy or Zuccarello, and they've had it at spurts. Well, then you had it for a long time, and he was playing there. And even during that, people were like, why isn't Husandinov up there? Well, now X back with them because they were in the top line. Rossi's on the second line. Husandinov's where he should be. Like, I right now, he has not shown me, I agree, that he is going to be a point producer at the NHL. It's extremely early.
Yeah. But last year, you look at Rossi, right? He didn't have a goal. Now he's got 20. So you can turn it around in a season. I'm not saying that Husandinov will never score at the NHL level. But from what I see a checking line center iceman with good speed and good instincts that can win the faceoff circle. And I know Wild fans roll their eyes like, we have enough checking line players. But, you know, he's a young, good skating, smart hockey player. And I think that's, you know, is there upside there? Certainly. I'm excited to see what he turns into being. But I think if that's what you end up with, is a good third line center for, you know, 6 to 8 years that can grow with the organization, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And if your top three centers next year are going to be Erickson Ek, Rossi, and Husandinov, you might as well see him in that spot right now. Like, they're not going to put him in a position where...
And they'd all be homegrown, by the way. Yeah. Like, and we've been waiting for this. Like, your draft picks become players, and this would be sort of that next wave of 3 draft picks that fill up the center ice position.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I get what you're asking, Denny, but I do think that we have to be realistic here and understand that Erickson Ek and Rossi are going to be your top two centers, assuming they're both back next year. I'm talking more about the latter because I do, you know, think the Wild would consider maybe potentially moving them. But you know, right now, I think this is fine. The problem is that he's playing with 2 guys on his wings that have had atrocious seasons, have done absolutely nothing, so that's also not helping matters. And the other night was a perfect example of that. They spent the entire night in the offensive zone and achieved nothing for that. Scott from St. Paul, you're on the Fan. What's up?
Hey, Russo. Who do you think is going to be favored to win the Stanley Cup this year? And then in a year from now, when we're out of salary cap hell, will the Wild go after a scorer like Fiala?
Good mic drop, and then he hung up perfectly. That was really funny. That was a good one.
Didn't they sign Kevin for Oh, he's saying seven. like
fan. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. No, it's a pretty funny.
Yeah, I was going to be there until he's 100.
I recognize the shade from Scott from St. Paul. In terms of, in a couple of years, I mean, the one thing that I am going to be interested in is obviously Faber's going to get paid. They're going to have to give Kaprizov a lot of money to try to keep him here. Rossi's going to probably be in a bridge deal. The cap's going to be up at $92 million. Then you start to count how much more money do they have, and then how much roster spots do they have with all these guys locked up. And I do wonder, you know, they have so many draft picks, so many draft prospects, I should say. At some point, you are going to have to make some, you know, use some of these guys as assets, as currency, and try to get some players in here. And I do think that's what Bill Guerin's trying to do, is sort of stockpile that. In terms of the Cup, what do you think, Joe? I mean, right now in the West, it's really, to me in the East, Florida is the best team. Boston has been shockingly good this year for a team that lost Bergeron. Obviously, doesn't have Chara. Like, up the middle, they're not very impressive. But Boston's been really good. Carolina adds Gensel and Kuznetsov at the deadline. I love them. So I think Carolina and Florida are probably your two top teams. Everybody, obviously, in Canada's going to be like Toronto, until they do anything in the playoffs. I'm not going to buy it. Do you know the Toronto Maple Leafs? They are the Minnesota Wild of the NHL. Do you know they have never won more than two rounds in their entire franchise history? Because the last time they won a cup, there were only two rounds.
I did not put that together.
Yeah.
They have gone through a lot of misery, obviously.
I'm going to put that on Twitter, let Leafs fans.
Was it last year was the first time in 20
fans
years?
Let Leafs fans that. Just call them the Minnesota Wild of the East.
Right? Last year, I think first time since 04 that they advanced past the first round. I think you're forgetting the Rangers.
Yeah, that's
which
good point.
It does pain me being a Philly guy originally, but Shesterkin is playing his best hockey. They're pretty loaded. They've got obviously a veteran head coach that's won before. And I told this to my buddy the other day, and this might pain some Wild fans, but in the West, I'm not betting against Andrew Brunette and the Nashville Predators. Like, I think there's a legitimate chance the Preds can at least reach the Stanley Cup final. They have grit. They have great goaltending. They have high-end players playing out of their minds right now in Forsberg and Josi. They have Ryan O'Reilly and everything he brings to the table. And I love Andrew Brunette as a head coach. Like, right now, I'm taking the Nashville Predators, and I would be riding that team until, you know, eventually they're shaking hands on the wrong end of things.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams. Oh my goodness, in this conference right now between Colorado, Vancouver,
Dallas. You know what's crazy? I looked at Dallas' numbers the other day because I pulled up some game notes. I forget who they had played that the Wild were about to play. This is just a couple days ago. Jake Ottinger has a goals against of almost 3.
Yeah,
and a save percentage under 90%. Yeah. And Dallas is able to outscore teams.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's been hurt. I know he hasn't had a full season. But he hasn't been 2.3 goals against Jake Ottinger. And again, I'll say this knowing the NHL save percentage as a whole is down this year. The median is, like, right around 90%. Like, it's not a great year save percentage-wise. And for goalie coaches, I'm sure they're trying to pull their hair out. But I'm shocked by the fact that Ottinger's numbers this late in the year aren't better.
Yeah, I agree with you. I saw the other day he was saying this has been his most mentally challenging, year of his playing career. And I still, having Jake Ottinger and that in the playoffs, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Like, I'm actually working on a story right now about how we all have to reset our brains of what a good goalie is, because it's, you know, I was talking to Danny Briere at the GM's meetings, and he said, I remember guys had 920s back when he played, and that was considered bad.
And they played 60 games.
Yep, and that was considered, like, mediocre.
Right.
Because so many guys were in the 930s. They've worked hard the last several years to create offense in the NHL,
and it's
clearly affecting the goalie. Let's go to some quick Twitter questions. Is Goligoski done? Somebody asked me. I mean, obviously, I don't know if he has played his final game in the NHL or if they're going to at least give him one charity game. But it sure feels like, well, he's definitely done here, and I've got to think that he's looking at retirement. I know he has said that he is not thinking that way yet, that he'll make a decision after the year. But clearly, they're done with him.
If you're him, it's a tough way to go out sitting in the press box all these games. I have to think that he gets a game down the stretch, especially if the Wild are eliminated or, of course, another injury occurs. If I'm him, is that how you want to end your career?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's a tough way, but do you go play a whole nother season just to prove you can play? Would he leave his family and go somewhere else? I would doubt that if I'm speaking for him. If I'm him, I'm hoping I just get a game or two down the stretch to kind of have that final closure to what's been an outstanding career.
I think in our Athletic poll last month, he was most likely voted by his teammates, most likely to be a GM one day in the NHL, and I think also coach. He was both. So very respected in that locker room, and maybe Bill Guerin will hire him and put him on the staff because I know there's a lot of respect there. Chris asks, odds that we see Jake Lucchini back with the Wild next year. He only signed a one-year deal, but, man, he actually he shows me a lot. He's come in handy.
Well, I think you can tell by how much he's played, meaning night in, night out, that he's earned the trust of John Hines. And when I texted Brett McClain, the Iowa Wild first-year head coach, when we first when Minnesota first recalled Lucchini, I was like, "What? You know, what's his story? What's the?" He said he's their Swiss Army knife. He was their Jules Erickson Eck down there, meaning every situation first over the boards was Jake Lucchini. He's come up here. He hasn't done a whole lot offensively, but he hasn't taken himself out of the lineup by playing poorly. And as you know, Russo, and a lot of our listeners know, if you can earn the trust of a coach, you have a way better chance to stay in a lineup than you do if the coach doesn't know you or doesn't like you or can't get used to the warts in your game. So we'll see what happens with Lucchini.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, you got it.
It was fun show. We'll talk about Marc-Andre Fleury next time I'm on. We'll talk about Charlie Strammel in the next couple days, all that stuff. Hey, Joe, 2:30, you think? Or 2? Or 2:15?
I mean, I don't know.
All right.
Just start listening at 2.
All right. This is Michael Russo from the Athletic filling in here on Beyond the Pond. Thanks, Max, behind the glass. Appreciate it, guys.